How are you? Welcome to the Drive Podcast. My name is Ted Henley. On the podcast today, rescue robots. Nah, this is not a kid's show. I'm talking about real rescue robots being developed through research at the University of Calgary. There's a human-like robot and a drone rescue robot in the works. On the podcast today, how artificial intelligence is playing a big role here and when these machines will be used by first responders. Also on the podcast today, when prices could start coming down at the grocery store.
Well, you're more than welcome, Ted.
So I'm very excited about this, Professor. Tell me about your research. What exactly can your rescue robot do?
Well, in terms of our work, we have been aiming to develop robotics, especially targeting confined spaces, you know, able to penetrate collapsed buildings, collapsed mines, damaged infrastructure, so that we can perform search and rescue operations and help first responders to do that. Basically, we have been working with what we call multi-leg robotic systems, you know, humanoid robotics, quadruped robotics with different number of feet, as well as acrobatic drones that are able to penetrate confined space and fly in cavities that otherwise it would be almost impossible for first responders to penetrate and try to search for victims.
Oh, it sounds fascinating to me. So tell me about, why don't we focus on, I guess, the human-looking robots first. You mentioned they might have, it might be a quadruped or something like that?
Yeah, basically, the number of legs is important just to enable them to perform maneuvers that they will need to perform in order to, you know, climb, penetrate obstructions, and do a number of acrobatic maneuvers that they will need to do to reach the victims and assess the situation, right? The human robots is a type of robot in which we're focusing on. Just because imagine a victim that is in shock, seeing a machine approach them. If it's not something that they recognize or something that looks familiar, they might be even more in shock. So we're focusing on human robotics just because we believe that it might also help victims a little bit feel more relaxed and calm as they are being rescued.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I totally get that. So can you describe it for us? Does the robot, the human-like robot, does it have, you know, a head and arms and that type of thing?
Sure. Right now, just as a comment, as far as I know, we're the only university in Canada or institution in Canada that are developing life-size human robots. So this robot is about 1.7 meters tall in height. It weighs about 80 kilograms. It have 32 motors or actuators to move the knees, the ankles, the hands, the heads, and all those things. And right now we're adding a number of sensors to perceive the space, create maps of the infrastructure, perceive sound, smell, gases, and so on. Once again, just to assess the situation and also to provide that information to first responders. Once again, this robot is agile, and the unique characteristic of this robot is that they are able to change locomotion style, like as we do as humans. We can go from walking to running to climbing in a split second. So we enable these robots through different control techniques, including artificial intelligence, to be able to do this by recognizing the space and making decisions on the fly.
Interesting. I'm chatting with Dr. Alex Ramirez Serrano, a professor of engineering out of the Schulich School of Engineering at the University of Calgary, talking about rescue robots. And so the human-like robot, Professor, how strong is it?
Well, right now, it's if you compare a typical human, adult human, this robot, just to give you a quick number, is able to carry three times what an adult human would be able to.
Yeah.
And just to put numbers into context, for example, if somebody stretches their arm in front of them, they might be able to carry a weight of maybe 20 pounds for maybe 3 minutes or 4 minutes. So this robot is able to carry about 50 pounds for of course for an undetermined number of time, depending on the batteries, right?
Sure. Yeah. And is the robot autonomous? Or is there a human controlling it?
Right now, it's a combination of both. Right now, one of the goals is to always have the human in the loop, just because we want humans also to be part of the decision process, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no recipe that we can actually tell the robots on how to achieve or perform a mission, just because the space in which we're aiming to deploy these robots are chaotic. We don't have a map. There's a number of challenges. So we don't have a recipe. So at this moment, we want to have the human in the loop. But because when we develop these robots in the confined spaces, communication might be difficult, sometimes interrupted. So we want the robot actually to be able partially autonomous and sometimes even make decisions on the flight without having to interact directly with the human.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. This is amazing. The human-like robot, are you able to, modify, I'm just thinking like its feet or hands, depending on the, rescue situation?
Absolutely. Right now, many of the designs processes that we have been developing take that into account so that we can actually, as you mentioned, change some of the geometrical features of the robot. Sometimes we use five-finger hands. Sometimes we use two-finger hands. Sometimes we use hands like hooks, depending on the mission, if it needs to climb or pull debris or push something. So we change all those things, including the feet and actually also the height, the length of the arms and so on. So one of the features that we have been developing is a robot that is that we can reconfigure as needed depending on the mission.
Yeah, fascinating. And when it comes to, the natural elements like cold or freezing temperatures, does any of that impact the robot at all?
Absolutely. Right now we're not really focusing on those things, but those are aspects that absolutely impact the robot. For example, in hazardous conditions, for example, a building on fire where there might be victims trapped and we might send one of these machines to try to rescue them. Those temperatures, yes, in a room where there's no fire, but it's surrounded by fire, can reach up to temperature up to 80 degrees, for example. So we have to have components, not just the mechanical parts of the robot, but electronic components and parts that should be able to resist those harsh environmental conditions.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the same goes for the cold, right? For example, deploying these robots in extreme weather conditions, that Arctic weather conditions.
Okay. Now, at the beginning of our conversation, you also mentioned something about drone robots that you're working on. Can you tell me about those?
Yeah, for sure. So the robots that we have been, robots are being more and more seen in our society. In hobby stores, we go and see robots that are basically manually controlled. So we have been developing robots that are able to perform what we call acrobatic maneuvers at zero speeds. For example, the helicopters are able to penetrate tight spaces just because of their flying characteristics. But you never see, for example, a helicopter fly with a nose up or down, right? Pointing up or down. So we have been developing these drones that are able to do these maneuvers in midair so that they can actually wiggle themselves to the confined space that they might encounter in these collapsed buildings, mines that collapse, or even beneath tree cover.
Wow. And do the drones have the same types of sensors to sense, gases and the dangerous situation and then relay that back to the humans,
Absolutely. And that's one of our main goals, to be able to have these machines be able to be reconfigured depending on the mission, right?
Yeah.
And that's because we don't believe, at least I don't believe that there is a silver bullet that will be able, a robot that will be able to solve all possible scenarios.
Yeah.
So the idea is to reconfigure as needed.
Yeah.
And the idea to be to reconfigure them in a really short time, right?
Yeah, of course. And Professor, if you don't mind me asking, how long will it take, do you think, until we start to see first responders using your drones or your human-like robot?
Well, we anticipate that the robots that we're developing might be able to be in action to a certain extent, maybe within 5 or 7 years.
Wow.
But having said that, there is many search and rescue agencies around the world that they actually use robots in their daily operations. But basically, they are manually controlled. And that's one of the deficiencies that we're trying to solve, because sometimes, you know, first responders cannot be first responders and robot operators and all those things, right?
Yeah.
They have a number of tasks on their hands, and they have to be focused.
Yeah. Fascinating research, Doctor. It sounds like we'll have to do an update in a little while here to see how things are progressing. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
You're welcome, and nice to talk to you as well.
Stats Canada's up with some data points today. Looking at retail sales, what caught my eye was the fact that nationally, beer, wine, and liquor sales down about 1.6% in the month of April compared to the month before. And grocery store sales also dropping in April, dropping about 0.3% compared to March. As for food prices, according to Stats Canada, they're up 10% year over year, comparing, of course, April of this year to 2021. And that speaks likely as to why we're seeing the, well, if you want to call it flat, it's flat. I call it a drop of grocery store sales. So for some perspective, we're joined by Dr. Michael von Massow this afternoon with more on this. Michael's a food economist, also an associate professor in the Department of Food, Agriculture, and Resource Economics out of the University of Guelph. Dr. von Massow, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess off the top, I love picking the brains of people like yourself, Doctor, about, you know, consumer behavior and the drop in sales in grocery stores in April. Was that drop in demand, did it come quicker than you would might have expected, or was it exactly what you were thinking would happen?
Well, I think we need to be a little bit careful to not overinterpret those numbers.
Okay.
If you remember, April actually has fewer days in it than March does, so it might just be accounting the number of days. It also depends on exactly when weekends fall. So there may be something there, but I'm not going to jump on the things are going through the floor already. Now, the thing to keep in mind is those sales numbers, and this, so I'm going to argue not to get too excited about it. Now I'm going to argue the other side, is with the increases we've seen, even small increases month over month, that means we are probably buying a little bit less, or at the very least, buying less expensive things, which is probably a more likely outcome. We're probably not buying fewer calories. We're buying cheaper calories, and that's probably why we're seeing some of that decline. The other thing is we're getting into patio season, and I think we're going to continue to see some growth in restaurant sales, which means we'll buy less food in grocery stores. Now, if you're anything like I am, we're spending less. We're not going out as much as we were before, but this time of year we would expect, as patios open, more people to be out and about eating. So,
okay,
long-winded response.
What other habits should we expect, Dr. Consumers, to kind of follow because of higher prices of food? Is it, do you expect that trend of buying cheaper calories to continue?
Yeah, I think what we'll see is, A, people will spend more time and attention looking at specials. So those of us who are willing to buy things that we don't eat all the time, many of us are creatures of habit and aren't willing to switch. But if you're willing to buy what's seasonal or what's on special, you can get a better deal. And that will definitely be a factor. I think that one of the big things we see is what I call trading down. So this time of year, we often see red meat prices go up, and they continue to climb for a variety of reasons, not least of which, again, we get into barbecue season, and demand for those barbecue cuts goes up. But given how expensive some of them are, we're probably going to see more people making burgers on the barbecue than grilling steaks. And so they're eating just as much protein. They're just eating it in a different form that's maybe a little bit less expensive. So you can trade down from the fancy things and still eat the products that you like, maybe just not the exact cuts that you like. So
yeah,
we're seeing that. I think I talked already about eating seasonally. This time of year, one of the things we see is as Canadian produce starts to come onto the market, even in a generally inflationary time, because those products are traveling less far, and we usually see some price reductions. So taking advantage of those is a big opportunity. And the last thing I'll say is I was just looking at those numbers that you were quoting, and if we're willing to be flexible, and maybe this gets back to my trading down, if we're willing to be flexible, frozen and dried vegetables are down a lot, are up a lot less than everything else in the general basket, and we're actually down almost 1% in April. So being willing to buy frozen vegetables or dried vegetables and while they may not be as crunchy as fresh vegetables, they're just as nutritious. That's another coping strategy that we're seeing a lot of people exercise as prices go up.
I'm chatting with Dr. Michael Von Massow, a food economist out of the University of Guelph this afternoon, talking about, food prices and, how much things are up in grocery stores. And to your point, doctor, with the trading down, I'm not sure if you've noticed this or not in your studies, but are you seeing at all consumers who are buying more plant-based proteins instead of just exclusively, the animal-based proteins?
Well, the truth is that many of these plant-based proteins aren't necessarily cheaper than some of our traditional livestock-based proteins. So, again, it's finding and picking the opportunities on specific things. And where you might find an opportunity is on less processed proteins. Canadian, produced in Western Canada, lentils or field peas or those sorts of things. While some of those prices have also gone up, if you buy them in a less processed state, but then you have to invest more time in them because it takes some time to prepare them and cook them and all of that, sort of buying those kinds of products may be a way to save money, but it's not clear if you're buying things like plant-based patties that mimic beef, that those are any less expensive and that the prices of those haven't gone up just as much. So while there may be arguments for and against going to a plant-based diet, saving money is probably, in the current environment, is probably not one of them.
Okay. Is there any relief on the horizon, Professor? Like, are you sensing at all that, maybe 6 months from now we might start to see at least things kind of leveling off, or maybe, fingers crossed, they start to come down?
Well, I think the answer to that is, to a degree, it depends. I think in the next 3 to 4, maybe 5 months, we'll see fresh produce come down because we're getting into the Canadian growing season.
Yeah.
As long as we have a decent growing season, those prices will come down through the summer, just like they always do. There is some reason for concern for next winter because many of our winter fruits and vegetables come from California. Things are profoundly dry in California. We've seen news about record low levels of water in some of their reservoirs, and that may affect production in California and affect prices in the winter. I also think it depends on what kind of crop we get in North America. It was dry last year. There are parts of Western Canada that continue to be dry. Some parts of Western Canada had huge amounts of moisture and have had trouble getting into the field. So what the crop looks like this year, given the ongoing war in Ukraine and some of those issues, I think I'm not super optimistic that we'll see significant relief by the fall. I think it's probably next year. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I think it's probably next year before we see any significant decrease or at least significant relief from the continuing climbing of food prices.
Yeah. Okay. Michael, I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Thank you. That's Michael von Massow, Dr. Michael von Massow, an associate professor in the Department of Food, Agricultural and Resource Economics out of the University of Guelph. He's a food economist. We've gone to him many times on this show to pick his brain about trends and what he's seeing for prices and what's driving things up and subsequently, we wish, kind of going down. Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.